Hello and welcome everyone to today's member prospect call. Today we have Jim Davis, and with a little luck, Brent Perry will be joining us. He's tied up with a client. But we'll start with Jim. Jim is a great member who he knows all the right things to say about why you join ACA. I want to let everybody know that Jim's getting a great big congratulations today. He just passed his EA exam, and he also just completed his 3 years of experience to use his CFP designation. So thanks, Jim. Go ahead and take it away.
Great. Thanks, Amy. I guess I would just like to spend maybe 5-10 minutes just to explain why I joined ACA, how I found out about it, and why I think it's a good value. Back in 2002, I think it was, my wife and I became clients of an ACA advisor. And I just liked the model, the way he worked with us, how he worked with us. It just made total sense to me. And he gave me a copy of Burt Whitehead's book. Burt's the gentleman that started ACA and has been doing the only financial planning for 30-plus years. And he gave me that book, and I read it 2 or 3 times, and it just totally clicked with me, the kind of the advising model of ACA, of how they advise clients. And I got to a point where the work I was doing at the time, it was just pretty tedious, pretty mind-numbing work. I just wasn't fulfilling. It wasn't a fulfilling type of job, and I had to do something else. And I was meeting with my ACA planner one day, and he asked me how work was going, and I said, it's awful, and I'm thinking about transitioning careers. And he said, oh, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to do what you do. So we kind of sat down, and just whatever we had on the agenda that day, we kind of put it aside and just kind of came up with a game plan of how I could transition into this career as being I came from a total non-financial background. I'd always had an interest in personal finance, you know, read books and magazines, but I was in a totally unrelated field. So what he suggested is, you know, first thing is go work on your CFP stuff. So I went back to Ohio State and took the CFP classes, and I don't know, that took about 1.5 years or so, and took the set for the CFP comprehensive exam in March of 07 and got that done. And then by summer of 07, I'm kind of itching to get going, whatever that may be. I thought about, should I go work as an intern somewhere, go work with somebody to learn the business? Should I start my own business? And, you know, it just came down to kind of taking maybe a leap of faith of saying, hey, you know, I'm getting in this to be a financial planner, to be a business owner. And that's where ACA came into the foreground where, like I said, I'd already been a client, so I knew what the relationship was on that side of the desk of being a client. But I started to research the model of ACA and whether it was right for me. And what I found, and I did a lot of research and talked to other advisors within ACA, and the bottom line is the way it was described to me, and it makes perfect sense, is that basically you're buying a business in a box where all the tools and the resources are there for you to set up a practice, to run a practice, and to be a successful business owner. So for me, being a career changer, it just made perfect sense to me. And typically what we find, or it seems like the folks that I've met through ACA, is a lot of folks are career changers, or maybe they had just set up a financial planning practice and they're just kind of maybe spinning their wheels a little bit, not getting the clients in, maybe their practice is not that efficient, so they join ACA to get the efficiency, not have to reinvent the wheel. Learn how to market, how to attract clients. So that's what really impressed me. So I signed up, I believe, summer of 07. So I went through the training from the summer, like end of summer 07, all the way through the fall. and sat in the week intensive training in Denver in 2008. So just about 3 years ago from now. So, you know, the training was great. It was robust. You know, you'll learn what you need to do to, again, not just advise clients, but how to set up a practice, how to run an efficient practice, and how to be successful. You know, I thought the training was very robust. It taught me what I needed to know. And what I found out later on, of course, I don't really have anything to compare it to, but I have talked to a couple other folks in ACA that were Garrett planners at one time. And what they told me, their personal experience was they thought the ACA training was much more in-depth and set them up much more to succeed. If you don't know much about Garrett planning, typically what they do is work with clients on a very limited basis where someone will come in, they'll sit down for a couple hours, work through a couple tiny little issues or smaller issues, I should say, and work with them and send them on their way and try to find another client and another client and another client. So the Garrett model, you can be successful doing that. The problem with that is you don't really build lasting relationships. It's just kind of a revolving door of new clients coming in and trying to find new clients. That's another reason why I like the ACA model is we do a retainer model where a client retains us year to year, and the first year we may be working with them 6 or 8 different appointments where we're doing investments and tax planning and insurance review and estate planning. And it can be kind of intimidating at first when you think about it, but you will receive the specialized training that you need to know to advise these folks. Because keep in mind, the typical client of an ACA member will be someone who's middle income or maybe upper middle income, so we're not getting into super complex issues typically, where you'll be able to you'll get the knowledge to be able to advise them on a variety of issues. And what we found is people love that, where they can come to one person or one shop, one practice, and get advice on their insurance, on their investments, on their taxes, cash flow, retirement planning, you name it. And what happens is, you know, you're meeting with them, like I said, maybe the first year 6, 7, 8 times, and then after the first year, you kind of get more into a maintenance mode where you're meeting them maybe 3 or 4 times. But there are enough meetings with the client where they become kind of sticky, meaning that they're used to coming to you to have their taxes done, their investments done, anything that may come up in the meantime, you're there for them. They like this model. It works for them, and we provide them a great value. We charge them a nice, healthy retainer. We make a nice living, and everyone's happy. And typically what you'll find is the typical Cambridge or ACA practice, 90, maybe 95% of their clients will renew every year. You know, we'll have a couple that'll drop off every year. It's not a big deal for one reason or another. But the idea is once you get a client on board and you do for them what you promise you'll do for them, most likely they'll be a client this year, next year, 5, 10, 12 years down the road. So that's what I liked, the idea comparing this to Garrett, where, you know, we'll get a core group of clients, we'll get to know them very well and do a great job for them because we'll get to know them very well year after year, know their personality, know the ins and outs of their finances, where we can really do a great job for them, instead of the Garrett model where, you know, someone may blow in for a couple hours, we don't know the ins and outs of their finances that well, and maybe not be able to do as good a job as we had hoped. What I'd like to mention also is that, you know, as an ACA advisor, you are doing fee-only financial planning, which is the future of this business. The traditional approach going back 20, 30, 40 years of financial, quote, advisors / salesperson selling products, you know, people don't want that. You know, they want to come in and have their planner give them sound, unbiased advice on their finances. You know, bottom line, they don't want someone to sit across from them and say, you know, you need $1 million variable universal blah 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 life insurance policy, and you know, oh by the way, we just happen to provide those. That's not what people want. So they really appreciate that. And I'd like to maybe contrast this a little bit also within fee-only. As I mentioned, we do comprehensive planning where we're doing insurance, estate planning, taxes, and investments, and maybe compare that to other fee-only planners that just do the investment piece. There are a lot of those folks in the fee-only world, and they do a good job. But they just do that little piece of the pie. And what we found is some clients that have come on within the last year or two, they were working with another planner here in town who just did the investments. And we know who this person is, and they run a nice shop, and they do a very good job. But our clients that eventually came from them would ask her some questions about retirement planning and tax issues, and she just wasn't prepared or qualified to help them in that area. And again, she did a very good job on the investment side, but just wasn't able to provide the advice that they really needed. And that's why they eventually switched over to us and paying a much higher fee than what she charged, but we're providing a lot of value for that fee. So then, again, that's just kind of a contrast between what we do as a comprehensive planner and what someone within the fee-only community that just does assets under management, that's just managing money. What I'd also like to mention is the community aspect of ACA. When you join, like I said, you'll have a pretty intensive training program to go through, and you'll learn a lot, but there's always questions that pop up, whether it's, you know, on the actual advising side or setting up an office. There's always questions that pop up, and there's resources within ACA to get you through that. There's other planners that you're going to get to know very well through committees that you'll serve on, through conferences, and through your brethren in your training class, and you'll get to know folks very well. And you're encouraged to, if you ever have a question, pick up a phone and call somebody. You know, that's part of what your membership pays for, is the access to the 150 planners in this organization. My first ACA conference I went to, they had a little get-together for folks who had just joined within the last year, the new planners. And he's been in the Alliance, I don't know, 10, 15 years, and has a huge practice. And that's what his point was, is use the resources you have within ACA. You know, he said that he had on speed dial about four or five other planners when he first started, just questions, issues that would pop up, and he literally had them on speed dial and felt, hey, I've paid my dues, I'm in this organization, I'm going to take advantage of that. There's a new member that joined, I don't know, within the last 6 or 9 months. His name's Jason. And he's been wonderful. He's on the discussion forum a lot. He's reaching out to a lot of people. So he's gotten a lot of help just from the resources, the people inside ACA. And I would encourage you to do the same. And that's what I've done. I try to serve on a committee here or there and try to meet people at the conference. And what you'll find, too, is people a lot of times have a specific ability that they bring. Maybe someone has a strong estate planning background or came from the insurance business. You'll get to know who those people are, and sometimes a client will come in with a situation that you're not prepared or have a lot of insight on, but you'll know to call, oh, well, John up in Wisconsin, he worked at Northwestern Mutual Life, he knows these insurance policies very well. Or we had a situation last week where we have a client that has all these incentive stock options, and some of them are non-qualified options, and this and that, and we had some questions on that, so we know Stuart out in Colorado is a whiz at this stuff, so we called him up, and he walked us through it, and was happy to do it. So that's what you get when you join ACA, is the structure, the background, and access to 150 of the best planners in the nation. There's no doubt about that. And I've kind of touched on this also. This model lends itself to building a sustained practice. Just by the fact that you're going to sign folks on to a retainer agreement and they're going to renew year after year after year. So typically it's not going to be someone that's just going to come in, you know, you work with them a year, then they move on. Typically they're going to sign on and be a client 5, 10, 20 years down the road. And that's where I see the value, building long-lasting relationships where you really get to know these folks. Now, I'm not saying that, hey, you join ACA and, you know, your phone's going to start ringing off the hook with prospects. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that they will give you the resources and the structure to build a practice, to learn how to attract clients. You know, your job would be to go out and find 12 to 15 clients, and that will give you a good base, and then you'll start getting referrals and your other marketing will kick in. But that's what your job would be if and when you joined ACA, is to go out and find a dozen clients. So what I would, I know I'm kind of rambling on here, but what I would, and I'll go ahead and wrap it up here, but what I would say is that this is a proven model to put a practice together on how to advise clients, how to attract clients, where you can learn from some of the brightest minds in the industry, where you don't have to reinvent the wheel. In this model, it's been refined over the years, where they're constantly updating the training materials and constantly receiving the input from planners from all across the country, and it works. It works. It's, to me, it was everything as advertised when I was looking into it, and I've been a member for 3.5 years and not looking back, and it's been great, and I'm going to keep on keeping on. Amy?
Thank you, Jim. Brent has joined us. Brent was stuck on the phone with a client, but he has made it on the call. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, hello.
Brent, if you'd like to tell people what you used to do and how you found your way to ACA, why you joined, why you stay, they'd love to hear it.
Sure. Well, kind of quickly, I'll just kind of tell you kind of my background. So I kind of came from the institutional asset management world, where I worked at a couple of big insurance companies and their asset management arms. So I kind of have an investment background, and I was actually kind of going down the CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst route at that time several years ago, and got kind of tired of the corporate world and really wanted to work more one-on-one with clients, and so I actually switched, and probably like some of you maybe are in a transition period thinking, hey, I would like to do this, and I don't know where everybody's at right now, but I started working for another financial planner who was a CPA, actually had a full tax practice, but also had built a pretty substantial financial planning practice out of his tax business. So, but was still doing an enormous amount of personal and business tax returns. So I worked for him for a couple of years, but realized I really need to go out on my own. I was really just helping him service his book of business. So I did probably, again, same thing as probably a lot of you have done. I looked around, found Garrett first, talked to them. I ended up going to a NAFA conference just to kind of meet some other people, which was a great resource. And actually that at the NAFA conference I attended, that's where I learned about Cambridge. And really, after comparing the two, for me personally, you know, Cambridge was the better model. It kind of fit my personality the best. And so I've been a Cambridge member for just over 4 years now. Been out on my own. So that's kind of my professional background. Now, Amy, I don't know if you want me to kind of chat about resources or how Cambridge works. I know Jim was covering some of that. I caught the tail end.
It's up to you. We can open it up to Q&A if you want to talk about, you know, why you stay with ACA.
Sure. Yeah, I can just touch on that, and maybe we can just jump to Q&A. So I'm solo. I have no employees. It's just me. I'm actually in Indianapolis, Indiana. And there are just two Cambridge advisors in the state, me and another guy. So and so the reason why I stay is simply, it's really, you know, it's multiple reasons, but it's simply a resource for, look, everybody's practice is slightly different. You're going to attract different types of clients, and so you're going to come, you can't know everything at all times, and you're going to come across issues that you're going to need help with, and Cambridge is that, for me, is where I can go to say, okay, I've got this problem, whether it's practice management related, it's specific to a financial planning problem that a client has. There is someone out there, probably multiple people within Cambridge, that can help me. There might be already developed resources that Cambridge has put out. If not, there is, you know, just as Jim was saying, you know, people have come from different backgrounds, insurance, you know, there's attorneys, CPAs, where they've dealt with these things in the past, and they have specialized knowledge. And so instead of you spinning your wheels or getting stuck, you know, you can have a successful outcome, and someone can help you, you know, help your clients. So it's just this brain trust that's really quite wonderful. And that's probably the main thing. The main reason why I stay with it now. So,
great. Thank you very much, Brent.
Sure.
All right. If we'd like to open this up to Q&A, don't forget you've hit *6 on your phones to mute them. So don't forget to hit *6 to unmute them. Anyone have any questions?
This is, pardon me. This is Doug. I guess I have a few questions.
Sure.
May I start then, Amy? You want me to go with the first?
Absolutely. Go with it.
Okay. Jim, the first one I had for you, I am a CPA. You know, okay. I've worked basically in a tax department for a Fortune 100 company for about 30 years or so. I'm looking to retire, and I'm relatively young, still in my 50s, and branch out into financial planning on my own. One question, luckily, you know, I have that CPA designation, but I know this would be a good question for you. I know you just recently now have completed your 3 years experience with the for a certified financial planner, and congratulations on that, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
So the question is, you have been now working the last few years, I imagine, on your own soliciting clients, but you really haven't had that designation yet. And it'd be kind of the same with me, because I could say I'm a CPA, but I it would take me a number of years to reach the CFP designation. How did you kind of market yourself as a financial planner without that designation until, of course, you know, now you have that today?
Right. You know what? What's funny is I thought that would come up quite often, but it really did not. I can remember twice being asked about that in dealing with a client or a prospective client, and I just kind of explained to them, you know, I've been through all the training, all the classes, the education, the continuing education, the comprehensive exam, but the CFP board just says, hey, you need 3 years experience before you can use the actual marks of CFP. And people mm-hmm. like say, oh, kind of like an apprenticeship type thing. I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh, yeah, I get it.
And are you a, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Are you a solo practitioner?
No. What happened, it was just kind of being in the right place at the right time. I came out of training, it was just, like I said, about 3 years ago, and I was just setting up an office and getting raring to go, and I'm in Columbus, Ohio, where there's another half a dozen ACA members. And there was a member here that had mentioned in the past that she had some tax-only clients that she'd like to pass off to me, that, you know, she was getting to the point where her practice was full. She couldn't take on any more clients. She actually wanted to cut back a little bit. And she said, you know, hey, I've got these tax-only clients. Would you like them? I'd love to give them to you. And I said, hey, great, yeah. Send them my way, absolutely. And the more we got to talking, she realized that she was at a point where she needed to do some succession planning. So she approached me, well, what she said to me was kind of flatteringly, she said, I want to merge our practices. And I said, well, Joanne, if you mean a practice where I actually have clients, then I don't have a practice. And she said, you know, I understand that. Basically, what she wanted to do was bring me on as a partner in her practice, and we formed a partnership a few years ago, 3 years ago, and where I'm slowly buying out her practice over a 10-year plan. And this is something that's just starting to happen within ACA and the fee-only field in the last few years where, you know, folks have been in the business for quite a long time and they're getting to a point where they want to slow down, but they want to hand their clients off to someone they know and trust. And so anyway, to make a long story even longer, I partnered up with her, and it's just worked out really well. But I meant to mention also that in my little spiel that this model lends itself to practices of different sizes. You know, some folks come in and say, hey, I want to have an empire. I want to have a huge practice where I have three or four planners on board, where I have three or four paraplanners and office staff and this and that, and that's great. Some folks come in and just say, hey, you know what, I want to be a one-man shop. That's who I am. I don't want to mess with all that other stuff. I just want to be a one-man shop. You know, maybe have someone do paraplanning or administrative type work, and that's fine too. There's different routes that you can take with this model.
Well, let me ask, how is, I know the typical client, I know you said, and I had read before, is kind of a middle income, you know, individual or family. And how is the retainer, if I might ask, just your typical retainer, calculated? Just to give me some idea in terms of, you know, what a typical retainer amount would be.
Okay. I would say a typical retainer for our practice, a typical retainer would probably run $5,000 to $6,000 for the first year. And it's calculated on their net worth, on their income, on any complexities that they might have if, you know, if they own a small business, that kind of thing. And typically, the renewals after the first year would be about two-thirds of the first-year retainer price, which, you know, you think $5,000 or $6,000, that's a lot of money for folks to shell out, but what we are usually able to do is provide or show them an exercise where we can show them that we can provide more value than what they're paying us as a retainer fee. And that's
I think that's interesting. Is that kind of analysis where you actually show the value? Is that a Cambridge analysis, or is that something that is unique to your own practice?
That's part of the ACA tools, where it's an exercise that you would go through with the client during the presentation appointment, where you can show them, you know, okay, here's, you know, we're charging you $6,000, but here's the value that we provide, and it's all broken out. And you can show them, yeah, okay, we're charging $6,000, but we think, you know, we can provide you a value of $12,000 or $15,000 or $20,000.
Okay, I think that's critical.
Absolutely.
I don't want to hog all the questions here because I know there's other people, but just let me ask you kind of a general broad question, but I think you've already kind of answered it. You know, I think I have the, personally, just for a moment, the skill set and the personality and the ambition to succeed. I just have this fear that I'll, you know, have all this additional education credentials, set up my office, and I'm going to sit there ready to go, and the phone's not going to ring. I know that sounds silly, but you know, so I know you kind of explained that you were luckily able to kind of merge in and kind of transition by purchasing out another practitioner.
Right.
So maybe you're not the right person to ask. I'm kind of curious. What do you do on day one to start the process going? What do you, you know, do you cold call? Do you, you know, how do you get that first dozen or so? I know, I'll just stop right there.
I'll answer this, and then I'll let Brent jump in as well, since he actually is out, you know, has built a practice up on his own. You know, first and foremost, you know, what I did when I first signed on to ACA, I was assigned a coach, and I'm sure that's still the process. And so we would have a call every few weeks where, okay, here are the tasks that you need to get done. So by the time I went through ACA training, and there are administrative tasks that you need to do and get an office set up and doing this and doing that, but she got me on track to where I got all this bull crap done before I came out of training. So I was raring to go. So it wasn't like I came out of training and I need to get my ADV done. I need to get my NAFTA membership going. I need to do this. You know, I had all that done and I was ready to go. Now, like I said, you know, your job just starting out is to go out and find 10, 12, 15 clients. And they will teach you how to attract clients. And a lot of it's going to depend on your personality. What you need to do is figure out the couple of things that you are comfortable with and that you will do on a consistent basis to go out and get those clients. You know, cold calling, direct mail, that's something typically that Cambridge advisors do not do. But there are ways, and they'll teach you those ways. It's just for you to figure out the two things that you know that you can do that you're comfortable with, whether it's speaking or writing articles or maybe aligning yourself with allied professionals like CPAs or estate planning attorneys. Or, you know, there's a bunch of different ways that you can utilize in your marketing efforts to attract prospects and assign clients. It's just figuring out what's comfortable to you, and quite frankly, that's going to be most of your job the first year to 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And that's great. I know I said that was going to be my last question, but maybe I could ask Brent a quick question.
Sure.
Brent?
Yeah, sure.
And according to my notes here, Brent, I wrote down that you've been at this now for 4 years. And and how, just in terms of your ability, and I know you're a sole practitioner, which appeals to me because I think that's what I would be doing. How could you talk for a moment about your success in attracting clients? And, did you start off with basically zero client base and 4 years ago? I'm not asking you to disclose, you know, your specific financial information, of course, but I'm just to get a feel for how happy you are with your ability to attract and where, how happy you are with your client, your practice today, 4 years into it.
Yeah, well, as of today, yes, I'm quite happy. So now, of course, at the beginning, 4 years ago, I left, you know, my previous employer, I started with zero. The day I opened my door, I didn't have a single client. I didn't bring anybody with me. I didn't even have a family member that said, "Hey, I'll be your first guinea pig or client." You know, so I truly started from zero, and I did use, and just as Jim was saying, so as far as Cambridge tools at the beginning, you're going to be assigned someone as a coach to help you, at least guide you along as to, you know, putting together a marketing program for you. And it truly is specific to you, because everybody's personality is different, what you do and who you know is different. So it's kind of figuring out what works. And so for me in particular, there was certainly a period of trial and error. I did a lot of, there's some in my city, there's some networking groups. I tried some BNI stuff. So I just tried several things. I'll tell you what worked for me. What was interesting is that I ended up getting to know, actually I started a NAFTA study group in my town, which one didn't exist. And there aren't a lot of NAFTA members. There's probably about 20 in the region. And so that allowed me to get together quarterly with other planners, and most of them were already established. They weren't ACA members; they were, you know, but they were, they did know fee only. They were all about being fiduciaries. So these were, you know, people that I could relate to. And what ended up happening is, over time, they got to know me, and probably about three or four of them have referred people to me over time, but one in particular gets a lot of, she's fairly well known and very, been in the area about 25 years. She's very established, is on the radio, and started, they'd get people that they couldn't take or didn't want or didn't meet their minimums, and she would just send them to me, which was perfect. So that was just kind of an interesting, and not to say that that's what you would do, but some people serve on, you know, maybe you're involved in the nonprofit world in your town, and so you volunteer, and that's the way you meet people. And there's lots of different strategies, but ultimately it comes about by trying to get people to know you, like you, trust you. And it's not about cold calling. It's also not about sitting at your desk waiting for somebody to call, because it's not going to happen, generally. Mm-hmm. So I know there are some areas of the country where fee-only planning is fairly well-known, and it's not as hard to get started, but generally you have to be proactive in attracting business. So, so it is up to you in marketing. Yes, in the beginning, you'll hear, if you do join and go through the training, you'll be advised that you probably should be thinking, certainly in the beginning, that 50% or more of your time, you should be doing some sort of marketing. So, because you got the time. So.
Do you find that your practice, once you get a certain base, like a dozen or whatever, that it kind of takes a life of its own by referrals? Is, I mean, are you at that point now?
Yeah, I am. And probably just in the past year, what's interesting is that since I started, the point that I started my practice, so I was in it about a year, then we kind of had this market meltdown, which my experience with the meltdown was is that the phone didn't ring at all. People were not seeking advice. So that kind of slowed my growth. But then probably in early 2009, the phone started ringing, and people became wanted to talk at least. So I probably had about a year and a half there where I felt like it was slower than it had been when I first started. But since then, it's been fine. And, so at some point what ends up happening is, and it's usually – I mean, it's hard to say, but let's say, you know, maybe when you're up to roughly 10 clients, then once they have some, they've been to several meetings with you, you know, might be several months, then you find that at least one or two of your clients, if not more, will start telling other people, and you'll get more calls. So yeah, so that it does become self-reinforcing, but that takes time to build too. So.
Yeah, thank you.
Brent brings up a great point about how there, you know, in any decent-sized city, there's going to be a lot of firms that will have minimums of, hey, we won't work with anyone unless they have $500,000 of investable assets. That's not a big deal to us. You know, we have some clients that have less than $100,000, but they have other issues that we can help them with. Besides just managing their money. Now, that's not going to be a $5,000 or $6,000 retainer. They're probably more like a $2,000 retainer, but there are things that we can provide, services that we can provide to folks that we can take them on as clients that other planners won't even look at.
Mm-hmm. I see. Good. Thank you.
Hey, this is Chris, and Jim, I'm in the Cleveland area.
So oh, okay.
A couple great. Of Buckeyes. But if either one of you or both of you could kind of speak to, like, you know, the typical first-year budget, what it would take. I'm a CPA. I passed the CFP a year ago. And kind of... looking to make the career move, but haven't been able to pull the trigger, and been talking with you know, some planners here locally, and you know, really kind of had a failure to launch, if you will. but I've been talking to you know, ACA the folks at ACA, and there's three people in the Greater Cleveland area that are
right.
ACA folks. And just to give us an idea of approximately how much your experience.
Brent could probably answer this better than I, just because we are in different circumstances.
Right.
A lot will depend on if you work from home. A lot of Cambridge folks or ACA folks work from home, or they started from home and eventually got office space.
Right. Yeah. And that's probably where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Brent could probably speak better to this than I could.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Cambridge does provide, and I don't know how far you guys are into the process, at least a kind of high-level estimate of kind of just a first year, second year, and beyond budget, which you may, I don't know if you guys have seen that yet or not. So that kind of gives you a rough idea. But from that point, it can be very specific to you. I'll just throw out some numbers, and these may or may not, again, you can adjust these as you need, depending on your circumstances. But the big thing is, yes, office space. If you can have a home office and you can see clients in your home, that's obviously a huge savings. But let's say that's just not feasible. If you're in a relatively large area, if you're close to Cleveland, I would imagine that one thing I did my first year, I didn't actually rent an office space. I did what was called a virtual office, where I could get 40 hours a month of office space. This place called Regis. They basically own a whole floor in an office building. And
I heard their phone number this morning.
So it's a way to maybe kind of control your costs a little bit more. It's a little bit more of a hassle because you can't keep your stuff at the office, but you have a professional space to meet someone. They have phone answering. If somebody calls you, there's a secretary that answers the phone or administrative assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And then so kind of once I'd built it up, then I switched over to I have an office that I paid for. But I would just say, first, if you were to take out, and I haven't looked at it, the ACA budget, if you took out the initial ACA fee, I can tell you my run rate right now, because I was just doing my year end. And so my run rate, my expenses, and I have pretty cheap office space, though, is about between, it's just under $13,000 a year, and I'm kind of cheap, though. So,
oh,
and
my.
I don't really buy a lot. that includes everything. That's all. That's all. That was all my expenditures for my business for 2010. Was just under $13,000. So, again, but that could be much higher. Some people invest in software, which is another thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you kind of stay with this, Cambridge might hear is, look, you don't really need to buy software, particularly in your first year. Just wait and feel it out. Cambridge provides you the tools you need. And then as your practice grows, you can decide if you want to grow into something, but you don't need to buy a bright, shiny piece of software right at the beginning and invest several hundred dollars. So I don't know if that kind of helps you give you a ballpark.
Yeah. Okay. I think I mentioned I actually heard a Regis commercial on this morning on the radio.
Yeah, they've been advertising a lot lately.
What kind of costs? What are they? What do they charge typically?
Been about 3 years. I mean, I think I was paying. And again, I'm in Indianapolis, which is probably a relatively small, lower commercial real estate market. I think I was paying maybe $220 a month, at first. So, but who knows? It could be higher than that. The other, again, you can look around if you need office space. Sometimes you can find an attorney that will say, "Hey, pay us $50, and you can use our conference room if you've got whatever." So there can be multiple options. So.
Sure. Okay. That's helpful.
Before I forget, I'm happy to leave my name or my email address and phone number. If you ever want to call, please do. My email address is jim@partnershipfinancial.com, just like it sounds, all together. And my direct line is 614-261-1995. Feel free to give me a call anytime.
And that's Jim at Partnership what? Financial?
PartnershipFinancial.com.
Do we have any other questions?
I guess one other would be, I noticed that, you know, you talk about, you know, like a, kind of having like a job coach and to help you set up, you know, your strategies and whatnot. You know, been a CPA for a number of years, and one of the things that CPAs do is they have like somebody to come in and review, you know, to say, you know, critique my plan or look over my work and see, you know, is this a good, you know, a good plan, or are there some areas where I'm deficient and maybe I could help out more, that kind of work. You know, like
yeah,
peer review.
I mean,
that's it.
Yeah. I mean, there isn't official peer review. But if that's something, you know, you would want to pursue, where are you at? Are you pursuing the CFP at the moment?
No, I need to get the 3 years.
You need to get the 3 years. Okay, so you're done with it, but you've taken the exam and.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There's not official. Yeah, it's different. Certainly.
Mm-hmm.
There's not
sure.
official peer review versus CPAs, but. Certainly, I mean, this is where, and maybe, you know, again, we don't really write plans where you not produce this 30-page plan and hand it to the client or you know, have something. It's a process, so you're going through kind of bit by bit. And
Okay. You
might look at the whole big picture at the beginning, but for the client's sake, so as to not to overwhelm them and so they actually get things done, we kind of say, okay, we're going to implement this in pieces. So then that way it's more manageable for the client, typically. But you're gonna have the whole picture. So you may not have a full document anyway, you know, especially, you know, maybe right after the first meeting with a client or the first couple. So,
mm-hmm.
But if you have questions, and this is where the intranet, this is where a lot of the action occurs, is on the ACA intranet where, we have, you know, the forum where we get, you know, people ask questions, all the Cambridge advisors ask questions of each other. So, and then also that's where kind of the relationships come in, where you're going to get to meet a lot of people in Cambridge, and you're going to learn who has expertise in what area. So you can say, hey, this is something maybe I don't feel comfortable with or I don't have a lot of knowledge or experience in. Let me run this by one or two other people or just the group and see what they think. And that's kind of to me, that'd be more of a peer review way of doing it. May not be looking at a full plan, but part of what you're looking at for a client.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No, that's it for me.
That's it for me.
Well, great. All
right.
Well, good luck to everybody.
Thank you, everyone, for participating in today's call. This will get posted on the website. And everyone, have a great day. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Amy and Jim and Brent. Thank you very much.
Good luck. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.